Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your hosts for this weekend show, and boy, oh boy, what a volatile week. That seems to be the new commonality for these markets, and that is indecision, people, investors, companies not really knowing what to do, not really having a good outlook on even where policy is going, especially in the U.S., to make decisions. And markets, they're reflecting that with a ton of volatility. On this weekend show, we're going to focus on more big picture, what's happening in the markets, also tying in the currency markets, the bond market. They're all telling, I think, a pretty defined story here of money potentially exiting the U.S. and who knows for how long that might be. And the big standout being the safe haven of the precious metals, gold especially. A lot for us to get to, and a lot that we have also talked about throughout the week on daily editorials on our website, podcast, and YouTube channel. So please, everyone, go check those out, comment, like, and subscribe. Without further ado, let's get into this weekend show, kicking off the show with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. That is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. And on the retail individual side, something that I think interests even more of our listeners, check out In the No Trader website. I'll post a link to that in the show notes. Rick has a number of different products, one being the weekly report called The Tactical Trader and a daily report called The Daily Tip Sheet. Rick, let's start off broadly with this volatility concept here. Markets in this week, this last week, started off very negative and then had almost a record-breaking rebound when we heard the tariffs were paused for 90 days and then turned back around. Overall, it seems like the trend is lower, but volatility reigns supreme. Rick, what do you take away from this market environment?
First of all, what do you mean volatility? There's no volatility.
Oh, man, this is crazy. The VIX is at 50, Rick.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about, well, we'll talk about vol, but let's kind of talk about what's going on in the markets in the sense of how fast things are moving and the inability for people to react to what's going on unless they're literally in front of their screens all day long, every day, which means basically full time staring at your screen, which is not what most of us want to do in life. But just to give you an example, let's go back a couple days ago to when Trump kind of pulled back on the tariffs. I think that was Wednesday, but I can't even remember anymore because stuff's happening so fast. In the first 2 minutes after he made that announcement, and I'm just literally looking at it right now, so I want to show, and let's talk about this. All right. The low in the spiders of when he made that announcement, spiders were trading at $4.99. 120 seconds later, this reached as high as $5.22. That's just insane. In 2 minutes, you realize that if we're talking, what did we say, 499 was? Yeah, 499. So 23 points in 2 minutes, that's 230 S&P points. That's almost 5% in 120 seconds. Nobody got a chance to do anything for obviously several minutes after, at which point you're paying up 6% or more than where the market was 3 minutes to 5 minutes earlier. It's insane what's going on. The only people who can react to that stuff as fast as they can are the algorithms, who instantaneously, they are monitoring news feeds all day long. And they pick this up way faster than anybody else can. And think about this too. You're sitting at home watching CNBC, let's say, or Bloomberg, any of these business channels. I know for me, at my particular feed, sitting at home watching, I am 45 seconds behind the actual time, right? And that's a lag both from the networks, from, you know, internet. So because every day at 4 o'clock, when the closing bell rings on my computer, which is literally exactly at 4 p.m., I see it does not close for 45 seconds later on CNBC. So I know that I'm almost a minute behind what's considered live. And in the scheme of things, you think, what's a minute? Well, now we know what a minute can mean. It can mean 20 handles in the S&Ps or more, right? It's insane what's happening. And the bottom line is, look, S&Ps are up right now as we're talking 34 points. That means, all right, so spiders are up roughly the same. Move the decimal over one, right? So in and around, you know, it's 1/10 of the move for spiders than what the actual cash S&P is. You cannot react fast enough to this stuff. And it takes nothing. If we're up 34 points now, in 20 seconds, we could be unchanged on the day right now. That's how things are moving. So as investors, you have to make a decision of how and what you want to do in an environment like this. You can choose to do nothing, which is what, of course, all the Wall Street firms hope you do, so that they continually manage your money. And although it's certainly less what they're managing than it was a month ago, to the tune of 10 to 20%, they still have you in and they're collecting their fees, which is why virtually no financial advisor ever says to you, sell, because it's a conflict of interest for them to tell you to sell. Because once they tell you to sell and you go into cash, they no longer can charge you on the assets they manage. So there's an inherent conflict to actually getting the advice that may seemingly be completely correct. So they've been taught to teach you, hang in there for the long run. You know, we'll deal with the short-term volatility. And when they say we'll deal with it, generally, now this is not every single financial advisor. And one of my best friends is a financial advisor, and he's been selling and he's been reducing exposure. But if you're the long-term buy and hold type person, they've got you convinced on a story that they've been saying for 50 years plus of buy and hold. You can't time the market. You know, we'll deal with drawdowns for the long term. Well, depends on what your investing horizon is, but between 2000 and 2012, the S&P was flat for 12 years. Had swings up and down, but it went nowhere for a dozen years. Buy and hold works if you're 30 years old. And I tell my kids all the time, don't worry about this because you actually want the market to go down. And they're like, Dad, what do you mean? We're losing money. I'm watching my 401k. And I said, yeah, I get it. But if it goes down, you get to buy cheaper. Let's assume 40 years from now, the market's going to be well higher. The best thing that can happen for you is that the market goes down while you're accumulating shares. And this is, of course, contrary to how the head thinks, which is you want to see your balance always, you know, going higher and higher. But it also means every 2 weeks when your paycheck gets put into your 401k, you're paying higher and higher prices. So the whole psychology right now is thrown into turmoil because we don't know what's going to happen at any given moment. And I think President Trump has proven to us that at any time he can say something that dramatically changes the game in a heartbeat. So you can either choose, let's go back to what I first said, you can either choose to just sit through this, not watch your account balance every day, and just keep buying over time. And again, it's great if you're 30. If you're in your 60s or 70s or 80s, you're in a whole different ball game of what to do with something like this. And there, I think you have no choice but to do some reduction of risk in the market, simply because the downside now is potentially equal or if not more to the upside in the next year or two. We don't know how long this tariff stuff is going to overhang the market and how much of what Trump is doing is kind of a wrestling match of wits between him and President Xi of China. And we know that for years, there are periods of times that the market simply doesn't rally or falls. And you have to decide how you're going to want to deal with this. And it's a decision you probably should make pretty darn soon, because the tariff hold for 90 days now that Trump talked about a couple days ago doesn't mean this is over. It just simply puts it on hold. And at any time, that can change from either party. The levels of which the tariffs are being imposed by U.S. to China and China to U.S. are the point where all transactions would virtually stop between the two countries, because nobody can do business with tariffs of 125% to 145%, which is where they are now. And what I've told my children is, for the time being, reduce your discretionary expenditures as much as you can. Now, going to the supermarket to buy food, that's not discretionary, that's necessary. So that's not where you skimp. But maybe you buy hamburger instead of steak, and you figure out and you stop buying clothing that you don't need, the wants get put on hold. What's the worst that happens? You buy those, that pocketbook you want or whatever. You know, my daughters are looking at it at any given moment, and they buy it 6 months from now, when and if things seem to be more stable. So I would tell your listening audience to reduce unnecessary spending right now and just kind of pull in the reins until we get some sense of stability and what's going on.
Well, those are some interesting initial thoughts, Rick. A lot to dig into. A couple of different strings we could pull on. One, the speed of the algos trade that no humans can react to, but just the way markets have shifted. But I think you made a great point about different investing horizons, and somebody in their 30s can ride out the storm that, you know, the financial planners and institutional mindset for the last 50 years has been just to buy and hold. But for somebody that's in their 60s, 70s, or 80s that needs that income or is depending on the markets to feed them an income in retirement, it's a different ball of wax. I've talked to a lot of people that are actually in that boat the last couple of weeks. They're not sure what to do. The biggest question, Rick, over the last couple of weeks has been, where do you hide? If you think back just to one Friday ago, we're recording this on Friday the 11th, but if you think back to the 4th, the day before that on Thursday, people were out on the mainstream media saying, go ahead and hold. It said, we're going to figure this out. The tariffs may be a little volatility. And then look what happened that Friday. And now a week later, we've had a roller coaster ride. One would think that in these kind of turbulent markets, people would rotate into bonds. And I want to get you to weigh in on this, because they usually go to bonds, the dollar, and gold. The dollar's down. Bonds initially got a bid the end of last week, but then they reversed course and have been selling off, and rates have been going up this week. Really, the only safe haven that's been working is gold. But what do you make in particular of the reactions in the bond market, Rick?
So bonds look like, when they closed under 4.11 last Friday, 4.11%, which had been the prior low, that they were going to head lower. And they gap lower Monday morning, but that was the low. Now, you guys get my reports, and you know, Monday morning on a daily chart, bonds got the TNX. So this is inverse to bond pricing, the TNX, which tracks the actual yield. So the yield chart got a buy signal on Monday's open. So it kind of nullified the thought that the weekly chart was suggesting breakdown, enough so that you might not have bought the yield chart or sold bonds, but you certainly wouldn't have played the sale in bonds, knowing the models. And this is what I, you know, have told my clients. Yields today got up to, hold on, let me just pull up the chart, because where they got to today was the last kind of resistance point, 4.58 or so, 4.59. This is the last resistance point on the chart until you get to the 5% high or so. That's the secular high. So it either holds here or we're probably making new highs. And this throws every, if we get to 5% or above, and we get to the high, you know, the secular high made, what was it, last year? Or in, it was probably late 23. You're in a whole different world of hurt now. The flight to quality for bonds is not working, obviously. Where do you put money? Which is what your question is. You put it in high yield savings. You can still get 4 to 4.5%. Forget going to the money center banks like Chase and Bank America. They clearly don't want your cash. And you're saying, what bank doesn't want my cash? A bank that pays you 1 basis point doesn't want your cash. So you go, you go to bankrate.com. You look at where you can get the most amount of money that is not tied up over time right now. And that is still most likely the best place to put your money if you pull it out of the stock market. I'll take right now a guaranteed 4 or 4.5% in a time of total disarray in the market than putting it in the stock market and hoping that what Trump's doing is going to work anytime soon. And look, as is often the case with this president, I don't necessarily disagree with the thought process of what he's doing. It's almost always the implementation, how he does it, that's wrong. And in this case, look, if the U.S. has been taken so advantage of over time by countries charging us tariffs on our products and us not charging them, I'm not opposed to offsetting the tariffs. You're going to charge 10% to us? Okay, fine. We're going to charge 10% on stuff that comes into our country. It's how he goes about this. It's a full-scale implementation without looking country by country and just saying it's on everyone. You know, it's some of the other things he's done where he eliminates whole departments of the U.S. government instead of looking at within each one, where can we eliminate? Instead of just saying, well, let's just get rid of the whole thing. So again, I think every American likes the idea of cutting down on wasted government expenditures. And his team has shown tons of absurd amounts of money that have gone to causes that do not help the U.S., do not foster the U.S. Virtually no taxpayer would want our money to go to, implemented by several presidents in the past. So I think most of us are fine on the idea of finding the waste in the government expenditures and getting rid of it. But again, it's how he goes about some of these things that creates the big problem, not necessarily the idea itself. So going back to tariffs, I don't have an issue with placing reciprocal tariffs on countries and stopping the U.S. from being taken advantage of. But it's how he does it. It's the wholesale one that markets now don't know how to deal with, understand the implications of it over time. And if you're a CEO, how do you plan for the future when this stuff is, you know, comes, goes, and now you're being said, you manufacture something overseas because it has traditionally been so much cheaper to do that than try to manufacture it here. Now you're being told, well, you need to bring it back here. First of all, can you even find the workers to go fill manufacturing, you know, factory type jobs any longer? There's so many things here that make the future unknown that is, I think, why one need to contemplate how much exposure you want to have to the stock market.
Well, we're seeing everybody kind of reevaluate that. But Rick, in a bigger picture sense here too, if we're not seeing the typical safe havens in the U.S. that investors have leaned towards, that being the dollar, that being bonds not reacting, and quite frankly, if we're seeing, in a way, kind of a loss of confidence in the U.S. markets, I do get the argument that buying opportunities come from big market pullbacks and the lack of clarity out there for investors. But is this pushing the U.S. and the U.S. markets into a different realm here, where U.S. stocks always got a higher multiple than anything else around the world? Could that all change here and really turn what we know it, the financial system and that playbook that has worked for decades, could that change?
It could. And look, I realize I'm not committing with answering like that. I don't know. We're at the forefront of potentially a change of the long-term outperformance of U.S. over Europe or, you know, Asia or emerging markets. It could. You know, the dollar just spiked down today, made new lows, took out, we haven't been this low since early 2022, and yet it's bounced significantly. So it's still kind of in the trade. If we were to close right now, we're still within the range that we've seen for the last few years. And I can tell you this, and you guys know this because I send you my research. Last summer, early last summer, when the S&P was, I don't know, 5,500-ish, give or take, I first started writing that if the S&P got to, my precise number was 6118, I mean, literally a precision number like that, that you want to greatly reduce your exposure to the stock market for at least a double-digit percentage decline. We got to within 0.5% on the all-time high of that level. And then we sold off 10%, we stalled, and then, you know, tariff stuff came, and then we fell another 10%. But before we fell that second 10%, I was in print saying, if this doesn't hold, and specifically it was the 547 level in spiders, if that didn't hold, we would fall to the low 480s. And as of the current low of this move was 481.80 in the spiders, where I had my own resting bids scaled down there and bought currently at the lows of the move. So I've sold the high and bought the low in print before the market ever got to these levels. So you can take advantage of this if you've got the right models and the ways of interpreting where people panic the most and when they're positioned the worst way at any given time. So I honestly don't know a single person else on the street who months before we got to the high said, that's where you want to reduce exposure. And then weeks before we got to the low said, this is where you want to put it back on. But this is all assuming that the current highs and lows stay what they are. If we take out the lows, then, you know, it could be a little BS type minor thing, but if it's more substantial, and this really ends up being, if the market's going to adjust price earnings multiples and forward earnings estimates, which were priced for peak performance starting this year. In other words, the current estimate on the earnings on the S&P 500 was $270 a share. And we were running at a multiple of about 22, which is traditionally well above normal. If we go back to a more reasonable level of, let's say, 18 times earnings, and the current estimate of 270 is even off by 10%, and the real earnings come in, so 270 minus 10% is, so that's 27, so 243, you get a target 18 times. The 243 gets you just shy of 4,400. So that means the market could still fall another 10% beneath what this year's low already is. And it's just a matter of, is that going to play out over time or not? And we don't know, given what Trump does or doesn't do at any given moment. Rates moving as high as they did this week was certainly not anticipated by bond players. And I have a very significant institutional client who runs a massive fixed income fund. He's a mutual fund portfolio manager. And, you know, what's happened this week is, you know, comes out of left field and just changes the game in a matter of days. I think I bought some bonds today because, to me, we either hold here or everything changes in the bond market. And then we go to 5% or higher in, you know, 10-year terms. I actually bought some muni bonds today. You've got to be able to think in terms of, when does it feel like there's max pain out there? Am I willing to take the chance to go counter trend to where that max pain is being felt? And what's my own risk parameters around that to say, well, maybe the reason there's pain is because there's going to be a lot more coming. And each investor has to decide for themselves what they're willing to do. Do they have the tools, or do they have someone like me as a resource? You know, again, I have the institutional side that I run a whole business, and I have the retail side through inthenotrader.com, where clients subscribe to. I have a daily newsletter and a weekly newsletter where I put out the thoughts I'm telling right now on air into specific ideas, and we go through each one of the markets, and, you know, I lay out kind of what I'm seeing, and at least I'm there to help clients navigate what's going on here. I can speak to you guys in a, you know, half hour interview and give some basic ideas, but to actually get levels and, you know, how to and when to do this stuff, the average investor doesn't have the help they need. And unfortunately, I'm going to tell and say something that they don't want to likely hear, but they're most, and again, I'm not going to say all because there are some good ones out there, but most financial advisors simply are money asset gatherers who make a cut for you to keep your money in the account. And that's what they're trying to do. Because how many, let me ask you this, and again, I can't poll your listeners because I'm not talking to them other than in a very large way here through an interview. How many of your money managers materially reduced exposure in the last few months, as I had recommended doing? And it's probably not 15%. They don't know how, it's not their game, and it costs them personally money to do that. So there is that inherent conflict. They want to do right by you, but they also want to do right by themselves. And doing right by themselves is often directly in opposition of what's best for you.
That's such a good point, Rick. And I think that it also highlights the strength that you play to when you look at not just what's happening in the markets as far as the macro, but you're looking at quantitative models, technical analysis. You're looking at the psychological side of trading and incorporating all those different data sets into your thesis. And there are times to sell, there are times to reduce, and you did have a great call there. And I think people that have been following you on our show or people that subscribe, which I do recommend checking out, could have seen your forecasting and your advice well in advance. I guess I just want to bring in one other sector here. I know it's not a sector that you put a lot of weight on, but our audience does put a lot of weight on the precious metals, Rick. They have probably an outsized allocation compared to, I guess I would say, normies. So gold has done well. It has diverged over not just the last couple of weeks, but over the course of 2025 here. It's been going higher while the markets have been going down. If you look at the Dow to gold ratio, or you look at some of those ratio charts, you've been seeing a divergence. It has actually acted like a safe haven. For those of us that are crazy gold bugs in the audience, what would you do now after the run you've seen in gold? Would you start reducing it down and then maybe play these counter trend moves back into some of these buy the dips? Or how are you looking at the precious metals complex?
So the low, I think it was, let's see, Friday, until five day, Monday of this week, was just above the 50-day moving average. It came back to what the highs were in February. I'm looking at COMEX Gold. And even though you introduced this with saying, you know, that it's a sector I don't put much credence in, that's, it's actually not true, because not only do I own gold, but it's something I write about every week. So I do watch the gold market. I can tell you, you know, tactical upside targets were near, and that's, let's call it 3277 up to 3301 is just the near-term targets off of action basically started on March 1st. I like gold long-term. I think all the fundamentals still would point to higher gold prices. And even if it pulls back, it would take a lot to change this from not being a bull market. It's one of the only bull markets you find on charts. And I had lightened, I told you this, guys, in real time, I had lightened my gold exposure at around $2,700. I had taken 50% off at around $2,700, and I put it back on that last day of February, but I only put half of the half back on at 2850. So I missed some of the upside, but I'm still long gold. And I think gold, you know, it is still a market to be in long term. I am in touch with and, you know, talked to by telephone the largest gold portfolio manager in the world. And I think the fundamentals are still there for long term performance. But like any other market, you've got to know, you know, positioning and understand if, when and if. And so would I go buy gold at $3,250 an ounce now? Probably not. But, you know, I like to buy when there's blood in the streets, and I like to sell when everybody's euphoric about something. So I don't think everybody's euphoric about gold. Central banks are still buyers of gold. And I think, you know, it's not crazy to think gold's going to $4,000 an ounce. It may even go to $5,000 an ounce over time, but you've got to deal. It's still a commodity. You've got to deal with the swings and stuff that take place in commodity markets. So if we ever got down to, you know, 28 to 20, I don't know, 650 again, probably a great place to buy it right here, right now. Tough to buy gold. And what I tell people, I've been telling people this for years. When you get a market that's ripping to the upside and you want to be involved, but, you know, we all want to kind of buy on a pullback and the market's not giving you a pullback, what I've often suggested to people is buy a third of the position that you were going to do. Put like a starter position on. If it falls, then fine. You still have two thirds of your money to at least be long when you want to on a pullback. But if it just keeps going up, you've got no exposure at all. So put on something where it's not enough that you're going to lose sleep at night if it goes against you, but at least you're making something. You know, if you think gold's going to $4,000 an ounce, then you put a little bit on. If you think it's going to $5,000 an ounce, you put a little bit more on, but you still leave enough to buy pullbacks. They always happen. It's just a matter of when and if you have the ability to time it. So I'm not a fan to pay $3,250 an ounce to first establish a gold position. But if you have none or you're looking to add and you just haven't, you know, so you put a little bit in. And again, figure out the point where you're not going to lose sleep. You put in something where you're not going to lose sleep if it goes and drops 10%. But at least it gives you something, because too many of us miss big moves because we're looking for pullbacks that don't come. And by the way, we started the show and the S&P was up 34 points. Now it's up 72. All right. So it's doubled its gain and it's the you know, this and it's midday. Still lots of time left today. Who knows which way we're going to close?
Isn't that the real takeaway from these markets, though? Who knows where we close day after day, and then even who knows where we open up the next day? But you are right, though, Rick. When you see markets taking off, hey, you can be a trend follower, too. Don't put all your allocation in it, but at least have a little allocation in these markets that are going up. And right now, it really just seems to be gold that is the big benefactor there, and even the gold stocks that are carrying along too. So, Rick, thank you, as always, for your time. I find these markets so fascinating to talk about, and quite frankly, there is a lot of question marks in traders' heads, but right now there is a standout market. That is the gold market, but there also could be some very good opportunities to buy the broad averages. We just need to see where this market is going to bottom and have a strategy when you're buying into that. Again, Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies. Click the link in the show notes to visit the In the Know Trader website to check out some of Rick's retail and individual investment products. Rick, great chatting with you. Thank you so much for taking time on this weekend show. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back for the second half of the show with Richard Postman.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.